Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And as always, I have a question for you. What do you think are the most common areas of confusion when it comes to spiritual formation? In today's podcast and post, we conclude our series entitled Fix Your Faith with a look at 10 watershed issues that either stunt our growth and hold us captive or truly set our lives free. Join me now as I give you just a taste of these key considerations, which I hope will start you into a transformative discovery and fix your faith. Hello, everybody, and thank you so much for coming back to yet another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. Welcome to Sunday. So glad you are here. Of course, if you're listening to the podcast, sometimes you get it early, maybe not so much today, but I'm glad you're here. No matter who you are, no matter where you are, I say this a lot, but I truly believe you are not here listening to this by accident. Many of you are accessing my content online at my website, kevinwinder.com. When you get there, sign up for my newsletter called Winder's Windshield. And if you look at my website, you realize everything is evergreen. Everything is not date stamped or subject related to current events, which means it's worthless a year later. Like, what good would a podcast about COVID be right now? The point is this is content that has created a repository, a library that you can access to answer big questions in life. And so you might be finding this days, weeks, months, years later, as many people do. And if you do, this is not incidental. I don't advertise, I don't promote, generally speaking. And as a result, if you're here, it's because you're on a journey. You are being pulled, you are being invited, you are being led to this. That means something is here. And so today, folks, I want to just welcome you and thank you for your time. You pay for this with your attention and your moments, your minutes, but never with your dollars. So be present, give yourself to what can be discovered, and let's see where this takes you. Today is our 8th installment. It is our conclusion of the Fix Your Faith series. And today I'm going to offer 10 watersheds, which I'll explain what those are. And I'm just going to jump into it because this will probably be a little longer than usual. So a little shorter introduction, and we're going to just jump right into it. And it is podcast number 481, Fix Your Faith, Part 8, our conclusion called 10 Watersheds. And so as we conclude this series, as we kind of reflect on what has been said, where we're going, if this is the first one you've tuned into, it's okay. This will still be important. I want to offer a few considerations, lay down a few cones, as I like to say. If this series did not really make sense to you, right, where I am basically following the life of Christ as a way to wake us up to the institutional powers, which is, if you remember in the temptation story, Satan said, I have all of these authorities and I give them to whoever I will. These authorities, exousion, are institutional powers. And so this is all about identity. It's all about ontology, our sense of being, who we are truly, our true self. This is what spiritual formation is all about. It's discovering who you are, who God is, and how all this relates to you in this world. Like, you have a cosmology, an anthropology, an ontology, and a theology, and they all converge in this thing called spiritual formation. And that is what I'm trying to get at with this series. And so I followed the life of Christ and showed us how to subvert these institutional powers that rule over us, that give us these malware scripts that train us how to think and think wrongly about ourselves, the world, and God and others. And as a result, we live in despair. We live in delusion and confusion. And this is the attempt on my part to kind of give you the raw structures, the tools you need to kind of reshape and figure some of this stuff out and actually transform your life and not go back into the same ditch. Today, I'm going to offer the 10 most common ones. But if this series hasn't made sense to you, you're probably over-identified with one or more institutional authorities in your life. You're too in bed with religion. You're too over-identified with your career. Like, you really think you are your hobby. You really think you are your denomination. You really think you are who your family says you are, or your friends, or whatever it is. Like, if you're lost in that, if you think your transgendered community defines who you are, you are over-identified, and I want to help free you from that. Okay, this is the world we live in. And confusion occurs when a person either lacks the categories to understand something or possesses a malware script, like something that's working against you. Like, you think something's true, but it's actually not true. And that untruth is harming yourself and others and the world. And I don't say this to be insulting. Please hear me. I'm not trying to be condescending as if I just know better somehow. Listen, I have personally know how hard my own journey to freedom has been. I can't imagine yours will be any easier. And so I'm sensitive to that. I realize that. And I offer all of this in solidarity with those who are actually seeking spiritual sight. You're actually trying. You're not just throwing the toys down and going home. You're not just coasting through life and just giving into appetite. You're actually trying to figure it out. And I credit you for trying. And God sees this. He will reward you. And that's why you're here, perhaps. So take the time with this content. And if I can support you, please just reach out. Now, this series has been a biblical roadmap of Christ following, not religion. I've never invited you into religion. I don't believe in converting people into a religion. We are already converted to the truth that we think is true. What we're doing is being completed by following Christ out of our traps, by becoming free in our mind, in our lives, by becoming free from over-identifying with these institutional powers that plague us. And of course, that's a hard journey, and we need a role model to show us the way, and that's what I believe Christ offers. And this is not a tribal game of Red Rover, Red Rover. Like, I'm not trying to get you to put a chrome fish on your car. The light pollution of 2,000 years of church history is so dense. It's a big shellac that has to be deconstructed. You got to peel off that varnish if you're going to experience the liberation that the gospel promises. Some of us have lived in a church and heard what they thought was the gospel for years and still haven't heard the gospel. Now, between now and Easter, I'm going to help make this journey easier for you and all comers, if I can, by kind of just showcasing some of Jesus' life and stories. I'm going to return to the parable narratives that I've been touching on. I've got a few more. I'm going to just blow up your wineskin with these. And so stick with this long-form content. I know you're used to death-scrolling and getting everything in a 12-second soundbite. But you're going to have to stick with this for weeks and months in order to truly grow. And that's what I'm doing here. I give this away for you. Okay? Stick with it. I'm building something really special in your life. Now, in thousands of hours, and I mean thousands of hours of uncoaching and counseling with a very diverse audience, I've kind of framed up some very common watersheds, which I'm going to offer you today, 10 of them. And a watershed is like when the drop of water hits the roof of your house, it either rolls into the backyard or the front yard. A watershed concept is when information comes to you and you either go one way with it or another way with it. And I've kind of pulled out 10 of these. I could do way more, but these are obviously the most common ones. And my intention is to make you aware of these considerations. See, both religious and irreligious people both tend to end up on one side of these frameworks. So that tells you that the religious mind and the irreligious mind are functioning on the exact same software, okay? And this is what I'm trying to help you with. Like, I know that a lot of people who have turned loose of religion and say, I'm an atheist, I'm an agnostic, I'm a tire kicker, I'm a very spiritual person, but I'm undefined, I'm nebulous. Like, you think you got away from religion, you didn't. You've just turned something else into your new religion, okay? I want to help you. Now, this means that we have a predominant epistemology. That's the way we know things. And it's malformed in our shared cosmology, our view of the world, and anthropology, our view of humanity. And so once we're kind of shown these differences and discover the deficiency in our own worldview, the true spiritual awakening can take hold. So if you were coming to me for uncoaching, this is what I'm going to do with you. I'm going to just deconstruct some of these key things to really see how you think. Like, what's your way of knowing? What is your underlying epistemology? Because there's no sense in beating you up with a doctrine. If you've come to a conclusion about something, I'm not going to come up and just say, well, that's a stupid conclusion. You should believe this way. That's what religion does for you. What I'm going to help you do is understand how you came to form that idea, why it's not helping you, and then offer you an alternative. And that's what we're going to do today. I'm going to give you 10 considerations, and they're going to be either or. They're going to be kind of in a versus this versus that, okay? Not so much either or, but they're really kind of designed to bring your mind to the focal point of the apex of the roof. So get your drop out of the gutter, back to the apex, and maybe you can roll down the other side if you so choose. How's that sound? So take this effort on your part, follow the questions where they emerge, and then just see what happens. If I can answer questions, let me know, right? If you have no questions, if you don't have a question, a next burning question, your spiritual progress is an egoic illusion, right? I'm trying to help you ask the question because that means you're in a growth pattern. If you're not asking any questions, you are flatlined, folks. Okay? All right, so let's start one. Watershed number one, and I'm going to just cruise through these, not with a lot of detail. You're going to have to either re-listen to kind of get it, and if something snags, pay attention to it, dive deeper, explore it, give me a call, whatever you want to do. This is for your consideration. Number one, binary versus ternary frameworks. So the most common watershed in spiritual transformation is learning to see the third way, right? We learn either or, black or white, hot or cold, on or off, binaries as children. And few of us ever evolve into the nuances of the variation. Now, we know that not all things are black and white, that life is shades of gray, as some of the common vernacular points out. But this ternary, this third, this Trinitarian worldview is actually shared at the higher levels of all religions. You see, as you mature spiritually, you gain spiritual sight, prideful, surface-level self, it gains power. That false self gets lazy when approaching the world in a binary. Because when you can just say, that's good and that's bad, that means that you are making a clear judgment. But when you're making the clear judgment, that means you are in control, and our ego really likes to be in control. And when something is more nuanced than just good or bad, black or white, it gets very frustrating. And the ego likes to stay in control, so it's like, no, we're going to just go back, double down with black and white, on or off, good or bad. Now, gaining that ternary worldview ends otherness. You turn on the news, all you're going to see is otherness. If you're listening to Fox News, it's the Dems. They're the others who are not like us. If you're on CNN, it's the Republicans. They're the others. They're not like us. Folks, we're all the other. Like, we have to get over that. Binaries are the indicator that you are a child in your thinking. You are immature. You are stuck. You are caveman-like. You have low consciousness. Okay? Christ offered us a ternary perspective. All things are possible. Like, it's not just daytime or nighttime right now. It's both. And it takes that transcendent ternary perspective to see how in the world it can be both day and night at the same time. Okay? So, gaining a ternary worldview ends this otherness. It ends our certainty. And we remain a student, a disciple of everything. Like, when you're looking for the third way, it means I'm not going to get stuck into either or. I'm going to look for another way. And that is faith. That is the student. That is the mathetes, the disciple. And it sets a course for your life of amazing discovery. So may I challenge you to free yourself from binary Platonic dualism, this crazy thinking. Okay. Number two, the Bible versus the Word. Sacred texts are not just old books that religions use to control people. And I hold that all sacred texts possess a measure of revelation. But the Bible offers the most comprehensive and historically accurate record of divine revelation, I'm convinced. It's not like the Upanishads or the Bhagavad Gita. I certainly like the Guru Granth of the Sikh tradition or the Quran or any of these others, right? It's not like they're a nothing burger. They have value. They access something. But they don't all possess the same archaeological, historical, and spiritual connotations all integrated into one place like the Bible. That's why I hold the Bible as premier above them all. Now, not all sacred texts are created equal. Like, they don't all try and be historically accurate. Some are poetic, and that's fine. They are not all sacred to people in the same way. Like, the big watershed here is when we get behind the words, behind the stories, behind the history, and definitely the religions and traditions that are built on top of these books. When you kind of scrape all that, bulldoze all that away, I know, don't you love the deconstruction imagery here? some of you, it just causes you to twitch when I talk like that. I don't want it to go away. Anyhow, when you get behind all the religions and traditions that are built on these things and you discover this everlasting word, this logos, the Sophia, the aletheia, the truth that lives and lives and speaks in and through and beyond the pages. Once a person realizes that this word, which was with God in the beginning of all time, is the subject and not the object, and is awakening us through the text, then the game of religion is over. And a person can finally be free. Like, you don't get stuck in the words because you have found the word. Instead of seeing it as an object, a book, an old book with various translations, some of which are closer in relation to the original than the others. And that brings this whole thing. Like, instead of getting stuck there and arguing there and having theological debates there, you see the word, the logos, who is a person, not a thing. It's a subject, not an object. And instead, you become lured by the elixir of religion instead of the logos. You will idolize the traditions book. You will start arguing the Bible versus the Quran, the Torah versus the Quran, the Guru Granth versus the Upanishads. You know, where does the Bhagavad Gita show up in all of this, right? This is not helpful. It means you missed the point. Okay? So if instead we're lured by all that, we're going to just become more confused. So confusion means you haven't found the Logos through the pages of Scripture, right? You're going to remain unknown to yourself. God will remain unknown to you, and you're going to just war over jot and tittles, dogmas and rules of man. That's where most people look at this and say, I give up on all of it. Okay? Think about that. I got to get going. We're only on number three. Okay. Here we go. Retributive or restorative justice. This is very simple, folks, but it opens up an unwillingness to leave religion because this watershed unravels 2,000 years of church history, and that scares people. If the Bible is true, God's basis of justice is not retribution. It's not getting even with humanity for our offenses, but instead it's based on restoration, making everything right. Now, Jesus said on the cross, it is accomplished, tetelestai. If Jesus is who Scripture says he is, then all of the retribution of God was poured out on him. As I've explored this, I've discovered over 130 verses in every book of the Bible that proves not only that God has always had a plan of restoration, but that retribution is actually a pagan misinterpretation of the God of the Bible. And I have it linked on my post. You can find it on my website, kevinwarner.com. Just go to retribution, restoration, not retribution, okay? You can learn more about that. But this is a huge form. Justice is a huge button for people. And it's shocking to me how people in the Christian religion are still insisting on retributive justice and still claiming that Jesus paid it all. They can sing Jesus paid it all and still want you to have to face the retribution of God. Impossible if Jesus is who he says he is. Number four, objective versus subjective God. Okay, so this seems obvious once it's pointed out, but until we catch ourselves in this error, our spiritual lives are largely just an illusion. This is what the atheists observe in religious people, and it just turns them off, and understandably so. Like, what they're looking at is they're seeing these people that just basically treat God as an object. They lack some interpersonal dynamic of God as a subject. God is up there, over there, out there, in there. It's this invisible other thing. Like, so that's why an atheist will say, well, it's just like believing in Santa Claus. It's not really there, but like it helps you to believe that, I guess, right? That's their conclusion. But that's basically because it's objective. Gaining a subjective understanding means that we move from a spectator or observer-based knowledge to a participant or loving experiential knowledge. This is something the atheist won't do. They refuse to even try, right? Because they're so certain they're right. But this is the difference. And every pastor is really trying to get his congregation here too. He's trying to get you out of the objective view of God into the subjective experience of God. This is a This is a difference of the true depth dimension, okay? Number five, static versus dynamic. This goes in tandem with the previous watershed. Like this whole religious ritual and tradition create a static, controlled, muted faith. Like if you go through your life trying to do the things the way we always assume God, who never changes, is locked into a fixed framework of operation, well, then you're going to miss out. God is not static and fixed. God who never changes doesn't mean that he's static. He's dynamic. He's always in flow. And these are superior understandings of God who never rests. That's how he doesn't change. He's always moving. And it's intimately active in every particle of the universe. And as we join this dynamic, flow, we gain spiritual sight. This is just the most fun change to watch unfold in people's life. When people catch this glimpse and they start living this way, like, faith becomes so real. God becomes so believable, and experience just goes off the charts. I love to watch that. Number six, wrath versus grace. Now, this debate seems like it'll never go away because people can't reconcile their assumptions about justice and love in other people. These are the first and third watersheds. As a result, the doctrine of grace is tragically truncated. It's cut off. It's too small for most people. Most religious people prefer a system of fear to one based in love. They don't trust love. And even if they accept a system based on love, like they say, okay, I get it, God loves people, they still want to have fear and retribution and the angry, hostile, oppositional God. At least we need to know that God at least hates those people. That's how I'll feel good about it. See, these are all watersheds. See how they all come together? And this is a simple paganism. This is not the Christian faith. This is not biblical. This is paganism that has co-opted the scripture. It's co-opted the gospel. And it's created a multi-billion dollar religious industrial complex of all different denominations. So until you understand grace, you or me, we don't understand. We don't have a spiritual awakening. Instead, we live in a religious prison. So that's what I'm always trying to free people from. Number seven, faith versus belief. Now, while the words for belief and faith are essentially the same or the same root, functionally, these two are very different. I like to consider belief to be a noun and faith to be a verb. Like you're faithing, it's an action verb. The two always go together in a linked linear flow, just like a sentence has a noun and a verb. But whatever a person believes to be true becomes the faith by which they live and act. So people say, I don't like my life. Well, that's because your life is the outcropping of your faith. You acted in the way that you believed, which means your fundamental belief is jacked up. And this is my whole premise for my book, Getting Better When You Can't. And people profess faith all the time, but their lives say otherwise. Jesus said a tree is known by its fruit. A belief is known by its faith. So we cannot grow in our faith if our belief is not something that is actually true. And this is why when you have teachers and preachers misleading you, giving you things that are supposed to be true that aren't actually true, yet your faith is stunted. And if you do an observation of modern evangelical Christian belief, and I ask you, where is all the transformation? There are 25 times more churches than Starbucks. Where is the transformed world? This tells you something is wrong with its belief system. It's not actually true. Some parts, the faith that they're applying is actually broken or way too small or deficient. So getting at this really makes a difference. That is what these watersheds help us become free. Like, they can really help you if you get there. Would you want a life of belief, static belief, or a life of active faith? You're going to have both, but understanding how they work together is going to change everything. We can look at our lives, we can look at the fruit of our lives and discover our true beliefs. They might actually be different than what we professed our belief to be. That's the big discovery. And then we can change them in conformity to what is actually true. And, you know, it sounds simple, but it's not always so straightforward. It's always harder to see than you might think. Okay? Number eight. The kingdom come or kingdom now? See, when it comes to heaven, the business of religion requires that heaven be relegated exclusively to the afterlife. And that entrance is entirely up to the CEO of religious leaders' discretion. So it doesn't matter what church, what denomination, what religion you subscribe to, the afterlife is the business. That's the business. And they're going to sell you the afterlife most applicable to you, most interesting to you. It's going to come at a cost. You're going to have to give up your time, your attention, and your money, and your children, and all the other stuff that goes with it. But, I mean, it'll be worth it because you don't want the alternative afterlife, right? Now, each of these companies establishes their stairway to heaven for you to purchase. That's the kingdom come. Like, this is all waiting for you to die. This is all insurance, fire insurance, really. And Jesus taught otherwise. Like, he said that heaven is within us. He said it's in the midst of you. It's here. It's now. This means that heaven was here now, 2,000 years ago. It's still here. It's still now. Yes. This means the work of religion as the ferryman to deliver us to the other side is just now can be seen for the manipulation, which it is. No one has experienced the kingdom of heaven. I should say, no one who has experienced the kingdom of heaven here and now and who knows how to access it here and now need to be the least bit concerned about where they are going when they die. It's that simple. If you can't access it here and now, if your entire religion and faith system doesn't see it here and now, celebrate it here and now, live in it, promote it, and build it here and now, but is only waiting for the other thing, I can pretty much assure you, if they can't get you here now, they're not going to get you there later. So, the kingdom is accessed by faith and how we live. It's very simple. These are the teachings of Christ, not the teachings of religion. And the kingdom that now versus the kingdom come is a huge watershed. If you get that one wrong, you can see how these derail everything about our faith. You want to fix your faith? Go back to these watersheds. I've got two more. Number 9, religion versus practice. And this kind of goes without saying. No religion has ever saved a single soul in human history, folks. There's never been the right or the best religion. That's because none exists. Jesus didn't say only one way goes to heaven, and that's Christianity. That's not what John 14:6 says. He didn't say one road goes to heaven. He said no roads go to heaven. Yeah. Religion isn't the road that's going to get you there. Only Christ gets you there. Christ following. And Jesus didn't come to start a new alternative religion. That might shock some of you. Like, the Christian religion has never saved a soul. It's not the best choice. Why are we in this business of converting people to this religion from that religion or any irreligion? It's foolishness. The Christian religion would never have become what it is today had it stayed true to the instructions of its founder, Jesus. What religion does offer is the opportunity to participate in practices which may or may not open us up to the depth dimension of God. It gets you there. It gets you focused. It gets you quiet. It sings a song. Your heart elevates. You hear some teaching. You have these moments where you actually start thinking about the depth dimension of life and God and the world. And maybe there God meets you. But the religion just provided the structure for that to happen. It didn't make it happen. God made that happen. These are not required. Neither are they consistent. Every church is different. Everybody does it different. Every religion is different. And some have incense and some chant and some don't. And some sing prom songs to Jesus and others have drums and skinny jeaned neck bearded worship guy who's all tattooed and whatnot. Listen, here's the thing. Instead of religion, why don't you just find your own practice? Some people like to be out in the woods. Some like to be on the run. Some like to go, you know, find God their own way. You can actually do that. Finding your own practice is far superior and freer than just going to a religion that doesn't relate to you. Many of us would do far better on a run or in the nature on a weekend than sitting in a religious ceremony. It's sad how few people can actually trust this. We have such little faith. And then lastly, number 10, escape or rebuild. See, this eschatological wart will not dissolve. It just won't go away. And what's that big word you just said, Kevin? Eschatological? That just is another word, eschaton, eschatology. It's the study of the end times, the end things. You see, modern religion, and particularly evangelicalism and Christian offshoots, like Seventh-day Adventists and Jehovah's Witness, they're always giving you these Watchtower magazines or talking about Bible prophecy, celebrating the Jews are rebuilding the temple, because in their mind, all of these things are the signs of the end of the world. They're obsessed with it. They're insisting that it's drawing near, and what that means is the rapture is going to come, and Jesus is going to evacuate everybody out of the world. Okay? Instead of learning the scripture and history, religious leaders have latched on to fictional narratives whereby they interpret the Bible as true based on the evening news. Folks, listen to me here. I have given tremendous years of studying this, and I can tell you that what most Christian Bible pastors, teachers are teaching is really an echo chamber of a belief system in the end times that came about within the last 100 years and mostly within the last 50. And because they haven't studied it, because they're closed to new ideas, this echo chamber is like a infection in the Christian world. And people are absolutely consumed with the end times. And now they look at the news and they say it's coming any moment. And they live in that, on that precipice, foolishly. The biblical error grows in the soil of other watersheds, as I've already shown you, where the water rolled down the wrong side of the house. Now nearly 70% of Christians believe the rapture will occur in their lifetime, and the end of the world is going to occur in their lifetime. And Jesus offered something completely different. He offered to come back in the flesh, in and as his people, where he is the head. Instead of retribution, wrath, and destruction, and opening a can of whoop-ass on all those people who didn't put a chrome fish on their car and listen to K-Love, he's actually rebuilding this world from the inside out. See, religion offers an evacuation from this godforsaken hellhole of a world, and Christ offers to restore all things in himself, since heaven is already here. Like these, this is not a popular change. Like when I talk to people and I show them and I can give you chapter verse, I can open up the Bible in a way. And most of the people who go through this will still reject it and say, no, I still really need to know that it's going to happen anytime now. So I throw this out there as just an invitation. If you're stuck on any of these, call me. Let's begin a dialogue. Let me help you through some of this. And if you think my cheese has slid off the cracker, then show me where I'm wrong and I will change. But I think these will get you to a new place. And I hope you'll sit with each of these and let them germinate in your thinking. Begin toying with the idea of, well, if this is true, then what else is true? Discover what is next for you. Lean into your next question. Folks, if you don't have a question, you're flatlined, you're dead. Wake up. Have a question. Find it. Use this as a tool to get there. And this is how we will begin to fix our faith. Let me know how I can support you, and may God bless you as you contemplate these things.